Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 258, entitled The Brown and Root of All Evil, subtitled Dick Cheney, Halliburton Oil, and the Narcotics Traffic. This particular program is being recorded on October 28th of the year 2000, and For the Record number 258 is going to consist of an excerpting of a very important article from the latest issue of the From the Wilderness newsletter published by Mike Rupert. Mike Rupert is a former LAPD narcotics investigator who has crusaded very heroically against the intelligence community's involvement in the narcotics traffic, and Mike Rupert's From the Wilderness newsletter carries some excellent information about the intelligence community and the narcotics traffic. This particular article is entitled The Bush-Cheney Drug Empire, The Bush-Cheney Drug Empire, and it is the lead story in the October 24th, 2000 issue of From the Wilderness. From the Wilderness can be accessed on the web, or information about From the Wilderness on Mike Rupert's website at www.copvcia.com. That's copvcia.com. You can also write to From the Wilderness Publications at P.O. Box 6061-350, Sherman Oaks, California, 91413. Phone number is 818-788-8791, and I will repeat this information at the end of this particular broadcast. This article deals with the Brown & Root Construction Company subsidiary of Halliburton Oil, the CEO of which is Dick Cheney. Brown & Root, as knowledgeable listeners are no doubt aware of, has a long history of involvement with the U.S. government in terms of enriching itself by government contracts. They held a lot of contracts in Vietnam during the Vietnam War. And Mike Rupert is going to present information which not only links some of Brown & Root's Russian operations in a concrete fashion to the narcotics trade, but Mike outlines the history of Halliburton Oil and Brown & Root and their operations, which have so often been contiguous to or directly involved with the intelligence community, the petroleum industry, and the narcotics traffic. Again, this is from the From the Wilderness issue of October 24th of the year 2000. It's entitled The Bush-Cheney Drug Empire, and this very important expose is authored by Mike Rupert himself. The article begins, "The success of Bush vice presidential running mate Richard Cheney at leading Halliburton Incorporated to a five-year, $3.8 billion pig out on federal contracts and taxpayer-insured loans is only a partial indicator of what may happen if the Bush ticket wins in 2 weeks. A closer look at available research, including an August 2, 2000 report by the Center for Public Integrity, or CPI, at www.public-i.org, suggests that drug money has played a role in the successes achieved by Halliburton under Cheney's tenure as CEO from 1995 to the year 2000. This is especially true for Halliburton's most famous subsidiary, heavy construction and oil giant Brown & Root. A deeper look into history reveals that Brown & Root's past, as well as the past of Dick Cheney himself, connect to the international drug trade on more than one occasion and in more than one way." The next section of the article introduces one of the major hard connections of Brown & Root to the drug traffic in recent years, namely a Brown & Root operation in Russia, which appears to have been directly connected to the heroin trade and perhaps a front for that. Continuing with this article, Mike Rupert writes, "This June, the lead Washington, D.C. attorney for a major Russian oil company connected in law enforcement reports to heroin smuggling and also a beneficiary of U.S.-backed loans to pay for Brown & Root contracts in Russia, held a $2.2 million fundraiser to fill the already bulging coffers of presidential candidate George W. Bush. This is not the first time that Brown & Root has been connected to drugs, and the fact is that this poster child of American industry may also be a key player in Wall Street's efforts to maintain domination of the $500 billion-a-year global drug trade and its profits. And Dick Cheney, who has also come closer to drugs than most suspect, and who is also Halliburton's largest individual shareholder, $45.5 million, has a vested interest in seeing to it that Brown & Root's successes continue." It is a pretty safe bet that the major news media are not going to discuss this a Washington, D.C. attorney for a major Russian oil company that is linked to Brown & Root and the drug trade, and he held a fundraiser for George W. Bush. I don't think this is something we're likely to hear about in the mainstream press. Continuing with Mike Rupert's article, "Of all American companies dealing directly with the U.S. military, and providing cover for CIA operations that few firms can match, of all American companies dealing directly with the U.S. military, and providing cover for CIA operations, few firms can match the global presence of this giant construction powerhouse, which employs 20,000 people in more than 100 countries. Through its sister companies or joint ventures, Brown & Root can build offshore oil rigs, drill wells, construct, and operate everything from harbors to pipelines to highways to nuclear reactors. It can train and arm security forces, and it can now also feed, supply, and house armies. One key beacon of Brown & Root's overwhelming appeal to agencies like the CIA is that from its own corporate webpage, it proudly announces that it has received the contract to dismantle aging Russian nuclear-tipped ICBMs in their silos. Furthermore, the relationships between key institutions, players, and the Bushes themselves suggest that under a George W. administration, the Bush family and its allies may well be able, using Brown & Root as the operational interface, to control the drug trade all the way from Medellin to Moscow. Originally formed as a heavy construction company to build dams, Brown & Root grew its operations via shrewd political operations to Senate candidate Lyndon Johnson in 1948. Expanding into the building of oil platforms, military bases, ports, nuclear facilities, harbors, and tunnels, Brown & Root virtually underwrote LBJ's political career. It prospered as a result, making billions on U.S. government contracts during the Vietnam War. I would interject, hedging its bets, Brown & Root was also deeply involved with Richard Nixon's political career as well. By the way, Brown & Root won the construction contracts to build and enlarge Da Nang Air Base, Cam Ranh Bay, a major port facility, and Tanzanut Air Base, all of those in the former South Vietnam, where, of course, the narcotics trade and the intelligence community were deeply intertwined. Continuing. Speaking of Brown & Root and LBJ, it prospered as a result, making billions on U.S. government contracts during the Vietnam War. The Austin Chronicle, in an August 28th op-ed piece entitled The Candidate from Brown & Root, labels Republican Cheney as the political dispenser of Brown & Root's largesse. According to political campaign records, during Cheney's five-year tenure at Halliburton, the company's political contributions more than doubled to $1.2 million. Not surprisingly, most of that money went to Republican candidates. Halliburton's 1998 purchase of Dresser Industries made Halliburton a corporation that will have a presence in almost any future oil drilling operation anywhere in the world. And it also brought back into the family fold the company that had once sent a plane, also in 1948, to fetch the new Yale graduate George H.W. Bush to begin his career in the Texas oil business. Bush, the elder's father, Prescott, served as a managing director for the firm that once owned Dresser, Brown Brothers, and Harriman. I would add that Dresser Industries was, in all likelihood, not only George Bush's first employer in the petroleum industry, but also his first intelligence cover, that discussed in Radio Free America program number 37, and also in For the Record program number 244. Continuing. It is clear that everywhere there is oil, there is Brown & Root. But increasingly, everywhere there is war or insurrection, there is Brown & Root also. From Bosnia and Kosovo to Chechnya to Rwanda to Burma to Pakistan to Laos to Vietnam to Indonesia to Iran to Libya to Mexico to Colombia, Brown & Root's traditional operations have expanded from heavy construction to include the provision of logistical support for the U.S. military. Now, instead of U.S. Army quartermasters, the world is likely to see Brown & Root warehouses storing and managing everything from uniforms to rations to vehicles. Dramatic expansion of Brown & Root's operations in Colombia also suggests Bush preparations for a war-inspired feeding frenzy as a part of Plan Colombia, unquote. This is consistent with moves by former Bush Treasury Secretary Nicholas Brady to open a joint Colombian-American investment partnership called Corfinsura for the financing of major construction projects with the Colombian Antioquia Syndicate headquartered in Medellin. Continuing, skipping down. According to the website of Colombia's Foreign Investment Promotion Agency, Brown & Root had no presence in the country until 1997. What does Brown & Root, which, according to the AP, has made more than $2 billion supporting and supplying U.S. troops, know about Colombia that the U.S. public does not? Why the need for almost 1 million square feet of warehouse space that can be transferred from one Brown and Root operation, energy, to another military support with the stroke of a pen? Well, I think that question actually pretty much answers itself and is rhetorical. By the way, Colombia, it should also be noted, as a major epicenter of petroleum exploration and production as well at this point. Next, there is discussion here of the contiguousness, to coin a term, of Brown and Root to the narcotics trade and in turn to elements of the narcotics traffic that have overlapped intelligence activity. The next section of Mike Rupert's article is entitled Drugs. It reads as follows. As described by the Associated Press, during Iran-Contra, Congressman Dick Cheney of the House Intelligence Committee was a rabid supporter of Marine Lieutenant Colonel Oliver North. This was in spite of the fact that North had lied to Cheney at a private 1986 White House briefing. Oliver North's own diaries and subsequent investigations by the CIA Inspector General have irrevocably tied him directly to cocaine smuggling during the 1980s and the opening of bank accounts for one firm moving 4 tons of cocaine a month. This, however, did not stop Cheney from actively supporting North's 1994 unsuccessful run for the U.S. Senate from Virginia just a year before he took over the reins at Brown and Root's parent company, Dallas-based Halliburton Incorporated, in 1995. As the Bush Secretary of Defense during Desert Shield, Desert Storm, 1990 and 91, Cheney also directed special operations involving Kurdish rebels in northern Iran. The Kurds' primary source of income for more than 50 years has been heroin smuggling from Afghanistan and Pakistan through Iran, Iraq, and Turkey. Having had some personal experience with Brown and Root, I noted carefully when the Los Angeles Times observed that on March 22, 1991, a group of gunmen burst into the Ankara, Turkey offices of the joint venture Vanel, Brown and Root and assassinated retired Air Force Chief Master Sergeant John Gandy. In March of 1991, tens of thousands of Kurdish refugees, longtime assets of the CIA, were being massacred by Saddam Hussein in the wake of the Gulf War. Saddam, seeking to destroy any hopes of a successful Kurdish revolt, found it easy to kill thousands of the unwanted Kurds who had fled to the Turkish border seeking sanctuary. There, Turkish security forces, trained in part by the Vanel, Brown and Root partnership, turned thousands of Kurds back into certain death. Today, the Vanel Corporation, a TRW company, is, along with the firms MPRI and DynCorp, from the wilderness, June of 2000, one of the three preeminent private mercenary corporations in the world. It is also the dominant entity for the training of security forces throughout the Middle East. Not surprisingly, the Turkish border regions in question were the primary transshipment points for heroin grown in Afghanistan and Pakistan and destined for the markets of Europe. A confidential source with intelligence experience in the region subsequently told me that the Kurds, quote, got some payback against the folks that used to help them move their drugs, unquote. He openly acknowledged that Brown and Root and Vanel both routinely provided NOC, or non-official cover, for CIA officers. But I already knew that, and Mike had some experience with Brown and Root as a front for narcotics-related activities when he was with LAPD. Time permitting, we'll get to that later in the discussion. Continuing. From 1994 to 1999, during U.S. military intervention in the Balkans, where, according to the Christian Science Monitor and Jane's Intelligence Review, the Kosovo Liberation Army controls 70% of the heroin entering Western Europe, Cheney's Brown and Root made billions of dollars supplying U.S. troops from vast facilities in the region. Brown and Root support operations continue in Bosnia, Kosovo, and Macedonia to this day. Dick Cheney's footprints have come closer to drugs than one might suspect. The August Center for Public Integrity report brought them even closer. It would be factually correct to say that there is a direct linkage of Brown and Root facilities, often in remote and hazardous regions, between every drug-producing region and every drug-consuming region in the world. These coincidences, in and of themselves, do not provide complicity in the trade, or do not prove complicity in the trade. Other facts, however, lead inescapably in that direction. And next, there's discussion of the relationship between Brown and Root and a Siberian oil field that is owned by the Russian Tyumen Oil Company. And in turn, the Tyumen Oil Company is controlled by something called the Alpha Group. As we're going to see, this particular aspect of Brown and Root's operations can be linked in concrete fashion to the narcotics traffic and organized crime inside of Russia. And bear in mind that the Washington, D.C. attorney for this operation threw a lavish fundraiser for George W. Bush, as discussed in the beginning of the article. Continuing with Mike Rupert's article, the CPI report entitled Cheney Led Halliburton to Feast at Federal Trough, written by veteran journalists Newt Royce and Nathaniel Heller, describes how, under 5 years of Cheney's leadership, Halliburton, largely through subsidiary Brown and Root, enjoyed $3.8 billion in federal contracts and taxpayer-insured loans. The loans have been granted by the Export-Import Bank and the Overseas Private Investment Corporation, or OPIC. According to Ralph McGahee's CIA base, quote, both institutions are heavily infiltrated by the CIA and routinely provide NOC, or non-official cover, to its officers. One of those loans to Russian financial banking conglomerate the Alpha Group of companies contained $292 million to pay for Brown and Root's contract to refurbish a Siberian oil field owned by the Russian Tyumen Oil Company. The Alpha Group completed its 51% acquisition of Tyumen Oil in what was allegedly a rigged bidding process in 1998. An official Russian government report claimed that the Alpha Group's top executives, oligarchs Mikhail Friedman, F-R-I-D-M-A-N, and Pyotr Aven, A-V-E-N, quote, allegedly participated in the transit of drugs from Southeast Asia through Russia and into Europe, unquote. These same executives, Friedman and Aven, who reportedly smuggled the heroin in connection with Russia's Sontsevo mob, S-O-L-N-T-S-E-V-O mob family, were the same ones who applied for the export-import loans that Halliburton's lobbying later safely secured. As a result, Brown and Root's work in Alpha Tyumen's oil fields could continue and expand. After describing how organized criminal interests in the Alpha Group had allegedly stolen the oil field by fraud, the CPI story, using official reports from the MSB, the Russian equivalent of the FBI, oil companies such as BP Amoco, former CIA and KGB officers, and press accounts then established a solid link to Alpha Tyumen and the transportation of heroin. In 1995, sacks of heroin disguised as sugar were stolen from a rail container leased by Alpha Echo and sold in the Siberian town of Khabarovsk. A problem arose when many residents of the town became intoxicated or poisoned, unquote. The CPI story also stated, quote, the FSB report said that within days of the incident, Ministry of Internal Affairs, or MVD, agents conducted raids of Alpha Echo buildings and found, quote, drugs and other compromising documentation, unquote. Again, quoting, both reports claim that Alpha Bank has laundered drug funds from Russian and Colombian drug cartels. The FSB document claims that at the end of 1993, a top Alpha official met with Gilberto Rodriguez Orejuela, the now-imprisoned financial mastermind of Colombia's notorious Cali cartel, quote, to conclude an agreement about the transfer of money into the Alpha Bank from offshore zones such as the Bahamas, Gibraltar, and others. The plan was to insert it back into the Russian economy through the purchase of stock in Russian companies. Quote, he, the KGB, the former KGB agent, reported that there was evidence, quote, regarding Alpha Bank's involvement with the money laundering of Latin American drug cartels, unquote. It then becomes harder for Cheney and Halliburton to assert mere coincidence in all of this, as CPI reported that Tyumen's lead Washington attorney, James C. Langdon Jr., at the firm of Akin Gump, quote, helped coordinate a $2.2 million fundraiser for Bush this June. He then agreed to help recruit 100 lawyers and lobbyists in the Capitol to raise $25,000 each for W's campaign, unquote. The heroin mentioned in the CPI story originated in Laos, where longtime Bush allies and covert warriors Richard Armitage and retired CIA ADDO Associate Deputy Director of Operations Ted Shackley have been repeatedly linked to the drug trade. It, speaking of the heroin, then made its way across Southeast Asia to Vietnam, probably the port of Haiphong. Then the heroin sailed to Russia's Pacific port of Vladivostok, from whence it subsequently bounced across Siberia by rail, and thence by truck or rail to Europe, passing through the hands of Russian mafia leaders in Chechnya and Azerbaijan. Chechnya and Azerbaijan are hotbeds of both armed conflict and oil exploration, and Brown & Root has operations all along this route. This long, expensive, and tortured path was hastily established, as described by From the Wilderness in previous issues, after President George Bush's personal envoy, Richard Armitage, holding the rank of ambassador, had traveled to the former Soviet Union to assist it with its, quote, economic development in 1989. The obstacle, then, to a more direct, profitable, and efficient route from Afghanistan and Pakistan through Turkey into Europe was a cohesive Yugoslavian-Serbian government controlling the Balkans and continuing instability in the Golden Crescent of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Also, there was no other way, using heroin from the Golden Triangle, Burma, Laos, and Thailand, to deal with China and India than to go around them. It is perhaps not by coincidence, again, that Cheney and Armitage share membership in the prestigious Aspen Institute, an exclusive bipartisan research think tank, and also in the U.S.-Azerbaijan Chamber of Commerce. Just last November, in what may be a portent of things to come, Armitage played the role of Secretary of Defense in a practical exercise at the Council on Foreign Relations, where he and Cheney are also both members. Speculation that the scandal-plagued Armitage, who resided under a cloud as Assistant Secretary of Defense in the Reagan administration, is W.'s first choice for Secretary of Defense next year is widespread. What is noted is that Armitage is a very close foreign policy and national security policy advisor to George W. Skipping down, one thing is for certain, as quoted in the CPI article, one Halliburton vice president noted that if the Bush-Cheney ticket was elected, quote, the company's government contracts would obviously go through the roof, unquote. In the next section of Mike's article, he discusses his own past involvement with, with the narcotics traffic when he was working as an LAPD officer, and his then-fiancée, a woman named Nordica Teodora Dorsey, or Teddy was her nickname, and I may be mispronouncing the name, attempted to recruit Mike into the CIA and attempted to induce him to use his LAPD work as a cover for cooperative operations with Ms. Dorsey and the Central Intelligence Agency. Mike writes about this. In July of 1977, this writer, then a Los Angeles police officer, struggled to make sense of a world gone haywire. In a last-ditch effort to salvage a relationship with my fiancé, Nordica Teodora Dorsey, D-capital-D-apostrophe-capital-O-R-S-A-Y, or Teddy, a CIA contract agent, I had traveled to find her in New Orleans. On a hastily arranged vacation, secured with the blessing of my commanding officer, Captain Jesse Brewer of LAPD, I had gone on my own unofficially to avoid the scrutiny of LAPD's Organized Crime Intelligence Division, or OCID. Starting in the late spring of 1976, Teddy had wanted me to join her operations from within the ranks of LAPD. I had refused to get involved with drugs in any way, and everything she mentioned seemed to involve either heroin or cocaine, along with guns that she was always moving out of the country. The director of the CIA then was George Herbert Walker Bush. Although officially on staff at the LAPD Academy at the time, I had been unofficially loaned to OCID since January when Teddy, announcing the start of a new operation planned in the fall of 1976, had suddenly disappeared. She left many people, including me, baffled and twisting in the breeze. The OCID detectives had been pressuring me hard for information about her and what I knew of her activities. It was information I could not give them. Hoping against hope that I would find some way to understand her involvement with CIA, LAPD, the Mafia, and drugs, I set out alone into 8 days of Dantean revelations that have determined the course of my life from that day to this. Arriving in New Orleans in early June of 1977, I found her living in an apartment across the river in Gretna. Equipped with scrambler phones, night vision devices, and working from sealed communique delivered by naval and Air Force personnel from nearby Belshoss Naval Air Station, Teddy was involved in something truly ugly. She was arranging for large quantities of weapons to be loaded onto ships leaving for Iran. At the time, she was working with Mafia associates of New Orleans Mafia boss Carlos Marcello to coordinate the movement of service boats that were bringing large quantities of heroin into the city. The boats arrived at Marcello-controlled docks, unmolested by even the New Orleans police she introduced me to, along with divers, military men, former Green Beret and CIA personnel. The service boats were retrieving the heroin from oil rigs in the Gulf of Mexico, oil rigs in international waters, oil rigs built and serviced by Brown and Root. The guns that Teddy monitored, apparently Vietnam-era surplus AK-47s and M-16s, were being loaded onto ships also owned or leased by Brown and Root. And more than once during the 8 days I spent in New Orleans, I met and ate at restaurants with Brown and Root employees who were boarding those ships and leaving for Iran within days. Once, while leaving a bar and apparently having asked the wrong question, I was shot at in an attempt to scare me off. Disgusted and heartbroken at witnessing my fiancé and my government smuggling drugs, I ended the relationship. Returning home to L.A., I made a clean breast and reported all the activity I had seen, including the connections to Brown and Root, to LAPD intelligence officers. They promptly told me that I was crazy. Forced out of LAPD under threat of death at the end of 1978, I made complaints to LAPD's Internal Affairs Division and to the L.A. office of the FBI under the command of FBI Special Agent in Charge, Ted Gunderson. I and my attorney wrote to the politicians, the Department of Justice, the CIA, and contacted the L.A. Times. The FBI and LAPD said that I was crazy. According to a 1981 two-part news story in the Los Angeles Herald Examiner, it was revealed that the FBI had taken Teddy into custody and then released her before classifying their information without further action. Former New Orleans Crime Commissioner Aaron Cohn told reporter Randall Sullivan that he found my description of events perfectly plausible after his 30 years of studying Louisiana's organized crime operations. To this day, a CIA report prepared as a result of my complaint remains classified and exempt from release pursuant to executive order of the president in the interests of national security and because it would reveal the identities of CIA agents. On October 26, 1981, in the basement of the West Wing of the White House, I reported on what I had seen in New Orleans to my friend and UCLA classmate Craig Fuller. Craig Fuller went on to become chief of staff to Vice President Bush from 1981 to 1985. In 1982, then UCLA political science professor Paul Jaber, or Jabber, J-A-B-B-E-R, filled in many of the pieces in my quest to understand what I had seen in New Orleans. He was qualified to do so because he had served as a CIA and State Department consultant to the Carter administration. Paul explained that after a 1975 treaty between the Shah of Iran and Saddam Hussein, the Shah had cut off all overt military support for Kurdish rebels fighting Saddam from the north of Iraq. In exchange, the Shah had gained access to the Shat al-Arab waterway so that he could multiply his oil exports and income. Not wanting to lose a long-term valuable asset in the Kurds, the CIA had then used Brown and Root, which operated in both countries, and maintained port facilities in the Persian Gulf and near Shat al-Arab to rearm the Kurds. The whole operation had been financed with heroin. Paul was matter-of-fact about it. In 1983, Paul Jaber left UCLA to become a vice president of Bankers Trust and chairman of the Middle East Department of the Council on Foreign Relations. And again, note in Mike's personal encounter with some of these types of operations that Brown and Root also figures directly in some aspects of the operation. The various tapes that I've produced over the years are available from a tape duplication service called Spitfire. That's one word, S-P-I-T-F-I-R-E. They're located at P.O. Box 1179, Ben Lomond, California, capital B-E-N, capital L-O-M-O-N-D, zip code 95005. The email address for Spitfire is mail, M-A-I-L, at spitfirelist.com. And there's a list of and description of the various tapes available from Spitfire on the Spitfire website. That's spitfirelist.com. And it's equipped with real audio so that listeners can hear the various tapes going out to the stations that carry this program the week that they're going out. Once again, this article that I have excerpted is entitled The Bush-Cheney Drug Empire. It's authored by Mike Rupert. It is from the October 24th, 2000 issue of From the Wilderness and copyright by From the Wilderness Publications. You can contact Mike Rupert and From the Wilderness at www.copvcia.com, P.O. Box 6061-350, Sherman Oaks, California, 91413 818-788-8791. That concludes For the Record program number 258. This is being recorded on October 28th of the year 2000. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.